Sadunam samachitanam. Mukunda chananaishanam. Upeksha kim dhanastam there. Asadbir asad ashayi. Sadunam samachitanam. Mukunda charanaishinam. Upeksha kim dhanastam bear. Asadbir asad ashayi. Please chant. Please repeat. Sadunam of saintly persons. Samachitanam of those who are equal to everyone. Mukunda charanaishinam whose only business is to serve Mukunda, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And who always aspires for that service. Upikshayi, neglecting the association. Kim, what? Dhanastambayi, rich and proud. Asadbihi, with the association of undesirable persons. Asat ashayi, taking shelter of those who are asats or non-devotees. Translation. Saintly persons, sadhus, think of Krishna 24 hours a day. They have no other interests. Why should people neglect the association of such exalted spiritual personalities and try to associate with materialists? Taking shelter of non-devotees, most of whom are proud and rich. Please repeat. Saintly persons, sadhus, think of Krishna 24 hours a day. They have no other interest. Why should people neglect the association of such exalted spiritual personalities and try to associate with materialists, taking shelter of non-devotees, most of whom are proud and rich? Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. A sadhu is one who is engaged in devotional service to the Lord without deviation. Bhajate mam ananya bhak. Titikshava karuna ka surida sarvadehinam ajata shratava shanta sadhava sadhu bhushanaha. The symptoms of a sadhu are that he is tolerant, merciful, and friendly to all living entities. He has no enemies. He is peaceful. He abides by the scriptures, and all his characteristics are sublime. That's from Bhagavatam 3:25-21. Asadhu is Surida Sarvadehinam, the friend of everyone. Why then should the rich, instead of associating with sadhus, waste their valuable time in association with other rich men who are averse to spiritual life? Both the poor man and the rich man could take advantage of the Krishna consciousness movement, and here it is advised that everyone do so. There is no profit in avoiding the association of the members of the Krishna consciousness movement. Narottam Das Thakur has said, Sat sanga chadi kanu asate vilas te karane lagila ye karma panda pangsa. If we give up the association of sadhus, saintly persons engaged in Krishna consciousness, and associate with persons seeking sense gratification and accumulating wealth for this purpose, our life is spoiled. The word asat refers to a Vaishnava who is not a devotee of Krishna, and sat refers to a Vaishnava, Krishna's devotee. One should always seek the association of Vaishnavas and not spoil one's life by mixing with avaiṣṇavas. In Bhagavad Gita 7:15, the distinction between Vaishnav and avaiṣṇava is enunciated. Namam duṣkṛna mudā prapadyante nirādhamaḥ māyāyā parityajñānā asuraṁ bhāvam āśrittaḥ. Anyone who is not surrendered to Krishna is a most sinful person, duṣkṛti, a rascal, mudha, and the lowest of men, nirādhamaḥ. Therefore, one should not avoid the association of Vaishnavas, which is now available all over the world in the form of the Krishna consciousness movement. Om jnana timindasya gananjana shalakoya chaksho unmilitamina tasmai shri gurave namaha nama om vishnubhaya krishna pristaya buddhale srimate bhaktivedanta swamini tanamane namaste sarasvati deve gaurvani pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Pashtyatri Shatarine Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shri Vasadi Gaura Bhaktivrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare Sarunam Samachitana Mukunda Charanaishinam Upukshe kim danastam ver asadbir asad ashrayi. Saintly persons, sadhus, think of Krishna 24 hours a day. They have no other interests. Why should people neglect the association of such exalted spiritual personalities and try to associate with materialists, taking shelter of non-devotees, most of whom are proud and rich? Thank you for coming to the Srimad Bhagavatam class today. I'll attempt to say something for my own purification and for your pleasure. So in this verse, this is Narada Muni speaking. Narada Muni is actually an exalted personality of pure devotee of Krishna. So his words are very powerful, and we should take instruction from his words, saying how we should think of Krishna 24 hours a day. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the most recent incarnation of Krishna, coming a little over 500 years ago in West Bengal, India, he gave us this process of chanting Harinam, the Maha Mantra. And in a purport to the Maha Mantra, Srila Prabhupada, it's a very famous purport. He's explaining how, as living spiritual souls, we are all originally Krishna conscious entities. But because we have associated with matter since time immemorial, we're now polluted by the material atmosphere. And he goes on to say that this sublime method of chanting the Hare Krishna mantra, the word sublime actually means to elevate to a high degree of either moral or spiritual purity or existence. So this is the sublime method in this age to purify our consciousness to come back to our original state, which is all pure. See, originally, before the raindrop falls from the sky, the water is pure. But upon going through the pollution of the air, hitting the ground and mixing with dirt and other pollution, the water becomes in an unnatural state. It becomes polluted. But there's a process in which we can collect this water and purify it, bring it back to its natural state. So similarly, this science of this bhakti yoga process is where we can purify our consciousness to bring it back to its original state, untinged by the material modes of nature. So many people nowadays, there's a new age scene going on where many people are trying to uplift their consciousness and learn more about spirituality. And a lot of times when I'm out and I'm talking to people, I hear the word mindfulness or trying to become one with nature, being connected with everyone, being connected with the source of everything. I remember before I moved into the temple, I was reading this book about Buddhist philosophy where the author was saying, he was a monk at a Buddhist temple, he was saying that now, since he has a broader perception of reality, he's never bored because he could just sit in one place and enjoy life and enjoy reality. So all this sounds really nice to be connected with everyone and everything, but how do we actually do it? There's no given knowledge or a process how to do it. And that's where this science of bhakti yoga comes in. So bhakti yoga is a very ancient practice. It comes from very ancient yoga texts that have been studied and practiced by monks, sages, and saints for thousands and thousands of years. This path of self-realization. And one of the most famous texts in the Vedic literature is called the Srimad Bhagavatam, which is what we're reading today. And Srimad Bhagavatam consists of 12 cantos. We're now in the 12th canto, or at the 10th canto, I'm sorry. And these ancient teachings are being practiced even up to this very day. The Vedic literatures are actually the oldest spiritual scriptures known to man. And this could be historically and philosophically proven. And by practicing what's within these books, we achieve the result of self-realization. So the reason why this Srimad Bhagavatam is an important text in the Vedas is because it gives many histories of narrations of people on the path of self-realization, achieving success, people who have become distracted on the path, and people who have committed mistakes and had to learn great lessons from committing these mistakes. So there's a saying that failure is the pillar to success. So if we have proper vision, we can see everything as a learning lesson. Even the most of the time where we learn our biggest lessons is through the obstacles and the difficulties that we have to go through in this world. And this Srimad Bhagavatam is a guide in which we can learn lessons from past experiences so it can further our path to enlightenment. to connect us with Krishna, who's within us. He's the reservoir of all beauty, the reservoir of all pleasure. So in this connection, this chapter is called the Deliverance, the Yamala Arjuna Trees. So in brief, Narada Muni is one of those souls who, also like the raindrop, he's not polluted. He's completely pure. Narada Muni is a devotee of Krishna, and he's actually endowed with mystic powers. He can travel from all around space. He can travel from one planet to another. And see, there's some souls who always exist within the spiritual realm or the spiritual world. And they come to this world not because they want to enjoy the illusion of material energy, but because they come on a mission to enlighten the souls that are stuck within this realm, to wake them up and teach them the path of self-realization. And most of the souls in this world are conditioned. They're trying to enjoy the illusory energy. But through the path of sadhana, sadhana means spiritual practice. So through the path of sadhana, they also become completely purified and can go back to the spiritual dimension, their eternal home. So Narada Muni is one of these great exalted beings. And the story that's being told here, I'll just say it in brief, is Narada Muni happens to walk through a garden. This garden's connected to Mount Kailas, Kailas Hill. Mount Kailas is actually the residence of Lord Shiva, where Lord Shiva sits on top of the hill and wrapped in meditation on Lord Krishna. It describes in the third canto, there's a whole description of Mount Kailas. And basically, he's walking through this forest and he sees these two brothers, Nala Kuvera and Manigriva. So these two brothers are actually very exalted personalities. They are sons of a demigod. A demigod is a higher personality existing in higher planets within this material world. So just by birth, they were very exalted. But because they were devotees of Lord Shiva, they got a boon of having material opulence and material riches. And they became a little proud of this. They became intoxicated with false ego and false pride. See, the tendency within this material world is the more riches, the more opulence, the more things we have, beauty, education, the tendency is that the false ego slips in and induces us to think that we're better than others, induces us to become arrogant, and it feeds the false ego. It puts fuel in the fire. So that's why generally monks take a vow of poverty, to stay in a humble and submissive position. So simple living and high thinking. So this is the best consciousness in which we can cultivate our spiritual qualities. So being puffed up by their opulence and riches, being falsely proud, they are enjoying a materialistic lifestyle, completely forgetting the goal of life, becoming distracted from the path of devotional service. And when Narada Muni walked by, the saintly personality, they offended him in such a way that they neglected that he was there. They didn't pay any attention to them, to Narada Muni. So, see, the nature of a yogi or a saintly person is that he's always trying to benefit others, because he sees everybody as an eternal part and parcel of Krishna. He sees everyone as a family member, as a brother and sister. The reason why he sees like this is because that's actually the reality. The reality is that we're all family and that we're all connected to the ultimate source, Krishna. So the nature of a saint is to help others. In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna explains that the learned sage sees with equal vision a brahmana, an elephant, a cow, a dog, or a dog eater. He also sees enemies and friends, neutral, well-wishers, even the good, the pious people, even the sinners, all with an equal mind, because he's not seeing with a material perspective. He's seeing the soul within, engaged within a material body. So wishing to do good for them, Narada Muni actually curses them to become to stand as trees for thousands of years. But the cool thing about this is had to stand as trees, but they had their original consciousness as before, so they knew why they were standing as trees, and they knew they made a mistake by becoming materially proud. And so oftentimes, you know, they went through a difficult time in the bodies of trees. They had to suffer like that. But ultimately, it was for their own good. And Narada Muni saw the whole picture, and he did this for their ultimate good. So oftentimes in our life, especially our spiritual lives, we actually have to go through difficulties to actually grow. I heard one analogy one time that I'll never forget, that if somebody's lifting weights, if they're just lifting 10 pounds and they just do that year after year and they don't put on any more weight, they just do 10 pounds, they're not going to get that much stronger. You know, they might be a little fit, but to actually get stronger, they put on more weight and more weight. And at first, it's really hard to lift the weights because you're putting on more weight. But as soon as you can do it, you can put on more weight and more weight. So just like that, it's a difficulty to lift up the weights, but he's actually becoming stronger. So the same with spiritual life. There's a saying that every flower has to go through manure to grow. So, but the way I've heard it was, instead of manure, they said another word that starts with an S. But I won't say that here. So the beginning stages of our spiritual advancement is we have to go through these tests and these difficulties and obstacles and get all these dirty things out of our heart. These are called anarthas. Anartha means unwanted things. So there's so many things in our consciousness that are unnatural, like lust, the desire to enjoy material energy, and false ego, false pride. So bhakti yoga is actually an art form. It's a whole science, how to crystallize the consciousness to its original state. And the reason why we call it a science is because in a scientific experiment, you first have like an idea, a hypothesis, and you go through the experiment, and then you get the result, and you see if the hypothesis was correct. So it's the same with self-realization. We hear from saintly personalities, we hear from the holy scriptures, and it makes sense to us logically. Our intelligence likes what we hear, so we put it into practice, and we actually get the result. So it all begins with shraddha, or faith. When I first came to this temple and I heard the word faith, I didn't really like that word because I was so used to Western religions and saying that if you don't have faith, then you're going to go to hell. But faith is actually something different than that. Not blind faith, but faith and understanding that if something's going to happen, if I do this specific thing, like everyone has faith that tomorrow the sun will rise. Everyone has faith that if I throw that cup up in the air, it will fall down. So everyone has faith in gravity. So similarly like this, when we hear from the holy men, we get faith, and then comes the stage of sadhu sangha. We associate with saintly personalities that are on the path, and we take up the path ourselves. This is bhajana kriya. And through bhajana kriya, we go through anartha nivritti, where we purify these dirty things within our heart, all the way up until we reach the highest levels of enlightenment, or pure love for Krishna, pure love for every living entity. There's a saint in our movement. His name is Rupa Goswami. He came to this earth a little over 500 years ago. He's a Nitya Siddha devotee. And he wrote Upadeshamrita, which is a Sanskrit word translating as nectar of instruction. The reason why it's called nectar of instruction, because there's a lot of nectar in there, and every verse is full of divine instruction. So he's giving instructions for the sadhaka. The sadhaka is one who practices sadhana, sadhana being spiritual practice. So he explains how the sadhaka can make advancement very nicely, step by step, starting from controlling the mind and the senses, and goes on to describing things that will distract us and divert us from the path, going on to things that will actually enhance our advancement and make us strong in our spiritual life, and even up to, you know, behaving nicely with people according to their level, their particular level of advancement, all the way up until like the higher very high esoteric realizations of Radha Krishna and Vrindavan. So this book is actually very essential to measure one's own advancement in devotional service. And in one of those verses, an indication that one is advancing says that a pure devotee is completely free from the propensity to criticize others. So we can really see where we are at and where others are at by what actually comes out of their mouth through, you know, verbally. What people talk about is kind of where their consciousness is. So also within this verse that Narada Muni is speaking about in Bhagavatam, it's saying that how the sadhu, saintly persons, they think of Krishna 24 hours a day. And also in Nectar of Instruction, Rupa Goswami gives the essence of all advice, which is to utilize every moment 24 hours a day in nicely hearing, chanting, remembering Lord Krishna's names, pastimes, and form. And like this, gradually purifying the tongue and the mind. See, the whole goal is to become completely absorbed in spiritual activities. The word yoga actually means it's a Sanskrit word, it means to connect or to yoke. So it's a process to connect our consciousness with the Supreme Consciousness. The whole goal of yoga is to control the mind instead of letting the mind control you. And controlling the mind and fixing it on one point. And even Prabhupada says in one purport in Bhagavad Gita that even if it's necessary, we have to control the mind by force and put it on spiritual activity. There's also another book called The Nectar of Devotion, where it describes the five most important processes or devotional service processes. Is reading Srimad Bhagavatam, the holy scriptures. It's chanting Harinam, associating with spiritually like-minded people, sadhu sangha, to deity worship, and to reside in a spiritual place or a holy dham, like Vrindavan or Dwarka or New Dwarka. But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he says that the most important process of devotional service is actually hearing and chanting. And chanting this Maha Mantra. Mantra is a Sanskrit word also. Man means mind, mana. And tra means to free or to release. So mantras are spiritually enriched sound vibrations that automatically, when vibrated and concentrated upon, it purifies the mind and frees one from all material attachment and entanglement. So this sound vibration, we say it repeatedly. See, repetition, it reprograms the mind from materially absorbed to spiritually absorbed. And this is also, in the material world also, the way people learn is by repeating something. There's actually a quote from Bruce Lee. He said that I fear not the man who practices 1,000 kicks once, but I fear the man who practices one kick 1,000 times. So when we just stick to the basics of devotional service, primarily hearing and chanting, and we actually really get into it, this is when all these dirty things actually become free from the heart. I also heard in a class that there's two dogs within each of us that are fighting each other. There's the good dog, the good qualities, the spiritual qualities, and the bad dog, the lower self. And they're always fighting. And the dog that will win the fight is the dog that you feed most, and if you neglect the other dog. So when we feed our spiritual qualities, automatically those spiritual qualities will defeat the lower self. And sometimes, at least for myself, I'm trying to practice devotional service, but sometimes it's difficult. The mind becomes distracted. And I'm just thinking, I'm reading of these great personalities of Gaura Lila and Chaitanya Bhagavat, and I'm thinking, man, it's really amazing. Am I ever going to be like that? You know, I want that. I want that realization. But in a morning walk in 1975, Prabhupada is saying, it's very famous, he says that in the word impossible is a word in the fool's dictionary. So everything's possible. It's possible to become a pure devotee tomorrow if we're really determined. and we want that. So in this purport, Prabhupada is saying, why then should the rich, instead of associating with sadhus, waste their valuable time in associating with other rich men who are averse to spiritual life? In this purport, Prabhupada is referring the word rich men to materially rich, having material opulence and wealth. But is that really what being rich is? In the spiritual sense, they're completely poor. They're bankrupt. In 1971, Radhanath Swami Maharaj, he met Mother Teresa in Calcutta. And Mother Teresa told him that the biggest problem in this world is actually people are starving of hunger. And she said that they're not starving from hunger of the belly, but hunger of the heart. People are spiritually hungry for something higher. They're hungry for happiness. And in Srimad Bhagavatam, in the fourth canto, I think it's chapter 7, somewhere Prabhupada's describing a pastime where there was this poor brahmana, and he went to Lord Shiva to ask for the best benediction in the whole world. And Lord Shiva advised him to go to Sanatana Goswami to get this benediction. So he went to Sanatana Goswami, and he said, "My dear sir, Lord Shiva sent me to you to attain the highest benediction." And Sanatana Goswami, who's also a very he's pure soul, exalted personality, he said, "Okay, I'll give you the highest benediction. Here's a touchstone." And he pointed to the garbage. And the touchstone was just in the garbage. And a touchstone is something where if it touches iron, it can turn any iron into gold. So this poor brahmana, got this touchstone and describes that he was just thinking, like, wow, now I can get like an unlimited amount of gold. It's like alchemy or something. I can get however much I want. But then he was starting to think, wait, if this is the highest benediction, then why did he just have it in the garbage, like he didn't even care for it, he was neglecting it? So being a wise personality, he went back to Sanatana Goswami and he asked, "Sir, why did you have this in the garbage? I want the highest benediction." And Sanatana Goswami said, "Are you sure you want it?" And he said, "Yes, I want it." And he initiated him into this chanting of the Hare Krishna mantra for self-purification, because this is actually the highest wealth one can have, is spiritual realization. And real wealth is actually sadhu sangha, devotional service and associating with devotees. This is actually real wealth. I remember last night, actually, I was with Osman. He is one of the new bhaktas here. He's been in the ashram for a couple of days. We were in the Sankirtan van and we were just reading. And we were reading a purport in the Bhagavad Gita where Prabhupada was just saying that the devotee doesn't have to strive for anything material because Krishna actually fulfills all material necessities. And I think he asked, like, what does that exactly mean? And I was trying to explain to my best ability, and I became like so grateful at that moment because I was just sitting there and I realized, like, wow, that's totally true. Krishna like gives you everything if you serve him. And I was explaining to him that I came to this temple with nothing. I was just kind of like a bum on the street. I was like dirty. I didn't have a job. I didn't have any money. I had like nothing going for me. And but I came to this temple, and just because I was trying to be a little sincere and trying to take it serious, now I'm sitting in a really nice van with all these clothes. I'm being fed every day. I got like the best friends in the world. I got the best family anyone could ever ask for. And I'm performing like a really awesome service of Sankirtan, which is actually doing something for the world that can help the world. And I'm sitting in this van, and I'm just like, wow, I'm surrounded by all these wonderful things. And it's just Krishna's blessings that just shower upon you if you just actually take up this process. So association is very important. That's what this purport is saying, to associate with sadhus and not materialistic-minded people. See, we've been in this world for thousands of births, so the tendency is the mind always wants to think of material things. So if we associate, there's a saying that if you hang out in like a barbershop, if you hang out at a barbershop for so long, you're eventually going to get a haircut. So that's like a, that's an analogy. You know, the people you hang out with, you're going to become influenced by. So it makes us strong and it makes us wise, learning from others. And in this connection, I could say one thing about a very saintly personality in our movement, in disciple Srila Prabhupada. His name is Vishnu John Swami. He's like such an amazing person. I've been reading the book Radha Damodar Vilas. It's like a really amazing book. It's basically all these devotees, Prabhupada disciples, that had experiences with Vishnu John Swami that are just glorifying him like anything. There's one person in the book, he's saying that Vishnu John Swami was my life and my soul. I didn't want to miss his association even for a moment. Just the thought of going away from him was like heartbreaking. You know, so association is very powerful. And I had this experience on book distribution like a few weeks ago, where just by remembering a holy personality, I became enlivened and enthusiastic. I was at UC Santa Barbara, and there it's a little tough because people are always in a hurry and they got to go to class, and so it's kind of tough to stop and talk to people. So I was just getting rejections, and nobody wanted to stop, and I kept saying to myself, man, I'm really getting a heavy dose. I kept repeating that for some reason. It's like, man, I'm getting a heavy dose today. And then I was thinking, wait, heavy dose? That's figurative, you know, but what does that actually mean? It refers to a heavy dose of medicine. So I was thinking, oh yeah, okay, I'm getting a heavy dose of medicine, and medicine is good. So, oh wait, okay, this is good for me. I'm getting purified, okay. So I kept going. And then I started remembering what I was reading in Radha Damodar Vilas, where one devotee was saying how, what do you say? Oh, okay, yeah. Vishnu John Swami, when he was preaching and teaching others, which he was always preaching 24/7, was that he didn't see that there's us and then there's them out there. He just saw that there's us. He saw everyone as a family. So I started thinking like that. And then I started seeing everyone as like my brother and sister. And it became actually really fun. I was just like going up, giving high fives to people, like, hey, what's up, brother? And they would stop and they would talk to me and take books. And I was also remembering one part in that book where the devotee was saying that how he himself, he saw Krishna consciousness as spiritual and the material world as Maya. But Vishnu John Swami saw a Krishna conscious world. And so I was meditating on that when I was out there too, and the whole atmosphere and the whole world like changed. It became like Vaikuntha, and I was distributing books to like my brothers and sisters. It was really amazing. And I had the privilege to travel for 4 months with a very amazing personality. His name is Madhavendra Puri Prabhu, and he's like amazing. We had so many loving connections and loving exchanges. He really taught me a lot about how to actually really love devotees and care for them, and to really be very intense in your devotional service. And so one time, I was reading the Radha Damodar Vilas, and they were making so many devotees. It was amazing. 4 or 5 people were joining the temple like every single week. And I was thinking like, man, that's amazing. I want that to happen again. And so, but they weren't really distributing books because there wasn't so much book distribution back then. It was mainly BTG and Harinam and just you know, talking to people on college campuses. So I was thinking, maybe I should do that. But then I was thinking, wait, no. There's so many things where Prabhupada is saying that book distribution is very important. And I was thinking, my authorities want me to do book distribution. So many people want me to do this service. So I explained this dilemma to Madhavendra Puri that I'm kind of confused what I should do. Should I keep doing my service, or should I maybe ask to do something else so I could try to make more devotees? And Madhavendra Puri kind of cleared things up. He said, see, what you're doing, if you keep engaging in the service, is you're pleasing your authorities and you're pleasing Krishna. and you're raising to the platform a pure devotional service. And he gave really nice examples. He was basically saying that sometimes we don't understand the full picture of what's going on. We're just doing our bit of service, but there's something that we're not able to see that's happening. So I really feel like that's what's going on. You know, Prabhupada is giving us this order to spread this movement, to distribute books, to do Harinam, etc. And sometimes it seems like there's no immediate effect. But Prabhupada is almost, it's compared to like an army. Prabhupada's like the general of the army. He's seeing everything. He's seeing the whole field. He sees where the enemy has to be attacked. He sees what territory has to be conquered. And we're just kind of like the foot soldiers. And all we see is the person in front of us. And we know that we just got to give him some love. And so we just got to follow the general. And eventually, we'll win the battle. And Madhavendra Puri Prabhu was saying that, like Buddha, he came to this world to... he wasn't preaching about God. He was just teaching to be peaceful and to forget the Vedas. But there, someone without proper vision doesn't understand that there was actually a bigger mission behind that. He wasn't thinking that, man, by me teaching these teachings, there's no bhaktas joining the bhakta program. Maybe I should like do something else. The same with like Shankaracharya, Lord Shiva himself coming to preach Mayavad philosophy. So he also wasn't thinking, man, no devotees are joining, maybe I should do something else. But he understood that there's a bigger picture. So I just want to say thank you very much for being really awesome devotees. And I love you guys, and thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Are there any comments or chastisements or questions? Oh, yes.
Thank you, Ananda Kirtan Prabhu. That was so wonderful. I can see, it's just a comment, I can see that you've been blessed by the Sankirtan movement and you have a good appreciation, you have the right attitude. And I was thinking if I could have learned that, and from you, everything you were mentioning, I was just drinking the nectar you were putting in realizations, and I can see that you're reading the books. And I was, since the verse that we were speaking about also was about association, it takes an association also. And I was wondering at what time are you going to mention the name of Madhavendra Puri? Because, the scriptures mention that there are different kinds of sadhus. And although he's not very easily understood, sometimes he's misunderstood by some people, but what a valuable association. He's so learned, he knows the scriptures, and he's so kind and humble. And whenever I saw him with you, I told you many times that you were so blessed and you're taking advantage of that, and now you're giving it back to us. So thank you for your service and for inspiring me. Now I've seen that you really getting blessed, and I hope I can also get the same, if I get the same attitude as you have. And that's good for the new devotees also to see that the Sankirtan movement can offer a lot. We just have the right attitude. Thank you.
Thank you for the excellent class and all your nice words. In the text, my question is about the word, I think it's Mukunda, being another name for the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So is that just another name for Krishna? And does that kind of relate to the gentleman you were talking about, that his association is so beautiful? Ajahn something? I forget the name. Yes, that gentleman, where he was like, all he sees is Krishna consciousness. He doesn't see the Maya, he just sees the Krishna consciousness. So is that word like Mukunda, is like all words just named for Krishna as well?
And not all words are names for Krishna. All words come from Krishna because everything is the energy of Krishna. But Krishna has infinite forms, and unlimited names, and according to his name, each name has like a definition or a meaning behind it. Like Krishna means all attractive, and Mukunda is the one who gives liberation, mukti, liberation. So the one who gives liberation is Krishna.
And I have one more question. Can I do one more question? Yeah. I keep hearing Sanskrit's the oldest, then I hear Sumerian, then I hear Madhu, also called the hieroglyphics. Anything more to say on that?
According to my understanding, Sanskrit is actually like the language of like the spiritual world, and so it's the oldest language. I don't really know what else to say about that. Yeah. It's the oldest language recorded in history, also in this world. Archita Prabhu?
Thank you for agreeing to give class. It's not easy to get him to give class. He's not naturally attracted to it, apparently, but we see the result. So this goes for all the other devotees also. When you're approached, see it as a service, just like you say you're sticking to the service of Sankirtan book distribution, even though there may be other options, but this is what you've been asked to do. So when you're asked to give a class, you should see it as a service and try to surrender to it, meditate on it. It's part of our legacy. Prabhupada himself set that example, that every single day someone should speak from the scriptures and everybody else should hear. So it's a service. It's a service established by Prabhupada himself, and it has to go on. So it's very enlivening to see younger devotees like yourself taking it seriously and stepping forward, because, you know, all of us older devotees, we're not going to be here forever. So this is Prabhupada trained us meticulously how to speak from the Shastra. He would engage his disciples in informal discussions on philosophy just to drive home the points. And so it's very enlivening to see a young devotee like yourself taking that seriously. And all the rest of you should do that also. Krishna consciousness begins with you. Everybody's now equipped to practice Krishna consciousness. Alone if necessary, better in association of devotees. So there was one question about this suggestion today that the rich don't take advantage properly of association of sadhus. They would rather associate with other rich people who are materially contaminated. But it seems to extend to the poor also. Is that your experience?
What was that last?
It seems to extend to the poor also. That poor people, it's not so easy to approach even poor people today.
Yeah.
This verse and a couple of previous verses seem to suggest that it's easier to approach poor people. Their doors are open. The rich man keeps a greyhound at the gate, as Prabhupada said. But nowadays it seems that even the poor people you can't approach. They're just, nobody's interested in spiritual life and knowing how to properly associate with sadhus.
Was that a question?
Yeah. So I'm asking, what's your experience? Do you find it easier to approach rich people or poor people, or neither?
I think you know the answer a lot better.
I'm asking your experience. You're out there every day distributing books. What's your experience? Is it easier for you to approach a poor person or a rich person, or maybe neither?
Yeah. Generally, my experience is when I approach people at universities that are very high-class universities, and people have a lot of money and a lot of things going in their material life, they seem a little proud, actually. It's kind of hard to stop them. That's not everyone, but generally that's the case. That's that example I gave from UC Santa Barbara. It's a very like high-class area, so people kind of just shun you like you're not very important. But when I approach people at like community colleges or people that are less materially fortunate, you know, they seem more kind of like humble and down-to-earth.
For instance, in academic outreach, which is one of my areas of concern, it's just the opposite. When we go to the very wealthy areas like Palos Verdes, you know, high schools like in that area, the kids are much more interested and much more attentive and much more interactive. When we go to schools in East Los Angeles, which are like a more, you know, poorer area, they just sit and they just look at you. You ask them to chant, they just, you know, and so it seems that, at least on the academic side of it, The poorer the neighborhood, the less interactive the kids are, the less interested they are. They just don't get it. They don't want to get it. When you go to the wealthier high schools, especially, colleges to a certain degree also, but in the wealthier high schools especially, the kids are very enlivened. They chant, they dance, they want to do the prophet step, and they get into everything, and they ask good questions, and it's very interactive. But in the poorer areas, they're just practically depressed. They don't interact. They just look at you like, you know, you're from Mars or something, and they don't want to interact.
Yeah, as far as I can understand, or my understanding is, Prabhupada's referring to people that are just like materially opulent. So they got so many things, they're just interested in enjoying material life. So they're completely distracted from the path. And if you approach them with knowledge, they think, I don't need that, I'm good. I got money, I got women, I got cars. But when you approach someone who has nothing, you know, then and they're suffering, then they're actually looking for something higher. But I think it all depends on the individual. Yeah. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna, Jai Jai.